You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 132. This episode, John Stewart Must Die. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Cahill, Colton Clayton, Brandon West, and we are the Green Lantern Corecast. About every 2 weeks, we give you news and reviews on everything you need to know about Green Lantern. Brandon, what do you have for us today?
Not a lot of news this week, Frank. First off, we got Matt Damon absolutely destroying any hope we had of him playing Hal Jordan in the rebooted movie franchise coming out in 2020. He literally says that didn't go so well the last time. A lot of talented people, and it didn't work. Maybe that's a sign I should leave it alone. It was an idea that was actually recently spread on the GreenLanternCorps.com forums. I'm on board with it. Matt Damon's not. I think that's pretty much the end of that.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you talk about he said talented people involved, and obviously he's being polite and stuff. It's funny, huh? Right, because then Mark Guggenheim wrote it, and Greg Berlanti wrote it, and they are responsible for all the DC TV shows. Ryan Reynolds is in it, and he was Deadpool, made tons of money. Taika Waititi was in it, and he's directing the next Thor. You know, so it's like what ended up being like a wellspring of like comic book goodies.
Yeah, unfortunately, I guess that leaves either Mark Strong as Sinestro, who was critically praised for that role, or Martin Campbell, the director, as the Fall Guy. So has to take the
break. I mean, do a lot of people still want Matt Damon as, you know, Hal Jordan? You know,
someone brought up the age thing. He'll be 50 in 2020. I think he looks fine. I mean, he's probably not the ideal choice, but he's definitely, if you want to reboot this franchise, you probably need to go with a superstar.
I mean, I totally understand a lot of people, like, you know, saying like Matt Damon, because again, he is best friends with Ben Affleck, and Ben Affleck, you know, being DC's new golden boy as Batman, they want to see like the two pairs coming back together, and seeing that Batman and Green Lantern since the New 52 having like a sort of a repertoire between the two of them.
Matt Damon can't be Robin? Come on.
Well, maybe Robin, but can he really be, you know, the devil may care attitude of Hal Jordan on screen? I mean, we've seen 5 Jason Bourne movies at this point.
I always feel like Matt Damon is playing Matt Damon anyway. And yeah, he's too old. The time has come. It's interesting because the conversation that he had where that came up kind of came about as someone was like, are you going to do any superhero roles? And he was like, I just don't think there are any left that are any good. And that's kind of how Green Lantern came about, you know? So, I mean, he would have been nice for something like Daredevil, like 20 years ago, but maybe it's time to let Matt Damon move on.
You know, I agree with that. I honestly, in my opinion, don't want to see, you know, Matt Damon as Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, or in the Green Lantern, you know, property. Maybe Ganther. Maybe he could be Ganther.
Let him be Kilowog. Yeah.
Ali Opsa, as I brought up earlier. He could be Chip. You know, he could be the voice of Chip, and that'd be a pleasant surprise, especially if Batman has an interaction with a chipmunk Green Lantern.
Mocap, man. Gotta see that mocap. I gotta see those Matt Damon.
I mean, if Rocket Raccoon worked, come on, Chip.
So anyway, in other nonsensical news, one of the writers from the Captain Marvel movie coming up, starring Brie Larson, she recently announced that their script had to be changed. Well, necessarily, Captain Marvel's origin had to be changed because it was too similar to Green Lantern. And, quote, obviously, that's not what we want to do. There's a lot of reinvention that needs to happen. So, another person downing the Green Lantern movie.
Well, she might have just been like, because it's not, she doesn't want to cross-pollinate.
Right. Kind of. I don't remember.
I changed the name of the character since they're not the original Captain Marvel.
I don't remember at any point that Hal Jordan suffering from cancer and dying.
I think the argument is right because she gets a cosmic, she's an Air Force pilot that gets like a cosmic power from a dying alien. And that's what gives her this kind of like, you know, ability to manipulate light, et cetera. It's there. I think there's a lot of room you could play with that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of room you can play with that. So I don't think you necessarily need to have it be as close as all that. You know, it just kind of sounds like that.
I can see that. I can understand that. I mean, dying alien inducted into an intergalactic space thing. I'm sure they have to come up with something brand new for Brie Larson. You know, the amazing, talented Brie Larson.
It's kind of a bummer, too, because the Green Lantern origin is kind of cool. And so to see it, even if it's not in a Green Lantern movie, to see something like that probably has a lot of, like, pathos. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. Honestly, as Frank has suggested, there's so much story for Carol Danvers in the 60 years she's been around that they could probably get away with doing whatever the hell they wanted.
I mean, she's done so much. You know, she's gone from Captain, you know, Ms. Marvel, you know, Binary, Warbird, to Captain Marvel proper. So she has a long extended history. I mean, I'm sure they could like pull something from her extensive, like, you know, catalog of years of experience into, like, you know, into this new movie. I would love to see how it's done.
Also, she worked at a magazine, Frank.
She worked as a head, what was she, editor? She was editor of her own magazine.
Essentially throwing her into the, I mean, I guess she was always kind of a military brat at some point, but throwing her into the Air Force the way that, like, Kelly Sue DeConnick, the kind of iconic current run has done, really, really drags her, really essentially made her the Lady Hal Jordan, unfortunately, like in tone and attitude and stuff. So it's kind of funny if you think of it like that. But I mean, it's interesting. Somebody should ask Kelly Sue DeConnick about that. Be like, oh, hey, so you're bringing it more towards Green Lantern, but whatever.
I mean, I loved her run. I love Kelly's run when she did, Captain Marvel, especially Captain Marvel and the, I'm forgetting what her core, the Carol Corps, I think it was called. Yep. So it was really cool. It was a really cool run.
Should they just be called the Carolers?
The Carol? No, Eric, no. No, that's too much of a pun. Brandon, what else you got?
I got nothing, so I'm going to turn it over to Eric, who wants to handle our TV coverage. I think something happened with the Television Critics Association this week.
There was the TCA this week, and they do presentations for different shows, et cetera, et cetera. And CW now has a majority of the DC properties on air on their network. And they announced a lot of news about crossovers. Dolph Lundgren's going to be on Arrow. There's going to be a musical episode crossover of Supergirl and Flash.
Dolph Lundgren's going to be on Arrow?
Yeah, he's going to be one of the bigger bad guys in the flashbacks this year. And
wow.
Also, they announced, like I said, the musical.
Oh, wait, so he's playing Drago again from Rocky IV.
He's just going to play awesome. Ivan Drago. Yeah, it's just going to be Ivan Drago. And because the timeline doesn't work, but like, why not? Like, he didn't die at the end of Rocky IV, so it's a sequel. But the musical episode, two-parter, is going to be great for Flash.
I mean, not to cut you off, but they have been talking about a musical episode ever since Melissa Benoit was casted at Supergirl, and the fact that Gus and Grant they both come from Glee. You know, they're
right.
Veterans from the Glee from the Glee show.
Right, so, they're both singers, and yeah. Carlos Valdez has a musical career.
And we know Joe Martin, Jesse L. Martin. Yeah. I always want to call him Joe because he's always gonna be Joe West to me now. But yeah, Jesse L. Martin is like, as we saw in the Earth 2 episode from Flash. He got chops. He can sing, you know, for days.
And right, and he was in the original Rent and stuff. Yeah, and so there and people kind of ask, like, what about the other shows? Well, they said certain characters like Victor Garber, who plays Dr. Martin Stein, was in Godspell and stuff. Like, you know, he's an accomplished singer too. So they are going to bring other characters and stuff. And it would be kind of a waste if they didn't bring at least somebody in from Arrow, because it would be for the comedy of one of those dour characters being involved.
Stephen Amell sing. That's going to be interesting. If he
actually I mean, you know, yeah, like the obvious choice is Malcolm Merlyn, because John Barrowman, releases a lot of albums and believes he's under the impression he can sing. So, you know, you might as well throw him in there too. But like, yeah, so the cool stuff like that, and then not a lot of Green Lantern related stuff, unfortunately. I know they're doing another CW Seed, which is their online app service cartoon, like their Vixen cartoon for Rey and the Freedom Force, and they've announced that Rey is going to be openly homosexual. And they also announced that one of the regular characters will explore their sexuality this year. So an established character in one of the four core shows will turn out to be gay. I think everybody kind of assumes it's going to be Supergirl's sister, because Maggie Sawyer is coming on that show as well. The only real related news to Green Lantern essentially was Lance Henriksen was cast as Obsidian, because the Justice Society is going to be featured heavily in Legends of Tomorrow this year. We don't know what his connection will be, if there will be any kind of allusions to Green Lantern. I imagine a lot of those shows love doing as many allusions
and,
as possible.
Yeah, and for most people who don't understand the connection between Obsidian and Green Lantern, Obsidian was at one point before the New 52 the son of Alan Scott from the original Alan Scott from the 50s.
You know, you're referencing a possible romantic relationship with Maggie Sawyer, but there's also Obsidian, who is gay and who could also be an alternate option for a romantic interest for an existing character from one of these properties.
Well, which is fair, but argumentatively, it's a CW show, and they cast Lance Henriksen, who is not a spring chicken. And so they would probably not want to do an elderly romance with as the outed homosexual, which would be fine. Sure, I don't care. Well, it's a great idea. I'm all down for the storyline. But I mean, it's CW, so they want to milk it for the real sexy drama. And you know, CW doesn't necessarily.
So they want young people.
Actually, I would love to see an older Lance Henderson. You know,
like make out with Wynn from Supergirl.
Yeah. That would be fantastic. But it'll be, but you know, but to be proud of his of his lifestyle choice and be proud of who he was, of who he is, and be just, you know, an openly gay elder states hero, just, you know, just being there, and that'd be great. You know, he doesn't need to be, like, you know, all over the place. He doesn't need to be on the map. He could just be living his life and be gay, and not, and it doesn't have to be his, you know, his entire character. It's just the fact,
right,
he's,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be great.
No, it'd be great. And I think the Arrow shows are pretty, they got an award for it. And you know, whatever you say about Arrow and all the other shows, I mean, every show is great except for, well, Legends and Arrow are terrible, but the other two are great. But whatever you say about those shows, they do try their best to do some legitimate diverse representation.
Now Obsidian is going to be in Legends of Tomorrow, right?
Yeah, okay. Presumably, yeah, probably.
And you know, again, and Legends of Tomorrow is going to be this season, this new season of it is going to have the feature heavily the Justice Society of America. Again, Alan right, Scott was one of the founding members. I would love to see if, you know, again, it hasn't been confirmed, hasn't been anything like that, but it'd be great if Alan Scott, you know, showed up. If there
well,
was
technically, you think they could get it around. I think they've suggested that those kind of things might still be off limits, but considering the amount of referencing they do at least allusions to, as we said, Hal Jordan's future sister-in-law is a character on Arrow this year. I mean, Hal Jordan himself had a cameo. So, like, they do like to reference Green Arrow when they can, Green Lantern when they can. It kind of brings up the argument as, like, Supergirl is going to feature Superman for several episodes this year. And apparently that was never off the table. It was always a potential option, even in season one. So he didn't have the same embargo kind of limitation on him that other DC characters do. So it's kind of interesting that it does make a certain amount of sense that Batman is still embargoed and they can't use him in the Batman universe, because not only is that always kind of been the deal, but I mean, there is currently a live action show featuring Batman characters. It's a little strange that Green Lantern would still be kind of locked up, especially considering they don't really know what they're going to do with the character right now. You know, I mean, they announced his movie in like 5 years, and now they're completely apparently tearing the whole schedule out and putting whatever they want. I mean, speaking of which, I mean, Suicide Squad opened, since the last time we did a show, and there's not terribly large amount of Green Lantern illusions in that either, but it was the jankiest movie I've seen in a long time. Like, it was, I mean, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, it's the editing and it's Warner Brothers' fault, but like, there was some stuff that was shot that should never have been shot on that movie. I mean, it was very poorly made. The first half was the slapdash garbage, and the second half was like the most saccharine nonsense. Just a real bummer. Will Smith was entertaining. Will Smith has that thing where every single time you see a Will Smith movie, you're like, oh, I love Will Smith. And like 3 days later, you're like, oh, I hate that guy. Hate that asshole. And then, you know, and then you force yourself to go see his next movie, like rolling your eyes, and then you love him again. So that happened. You know, I don't know if anybody else, I think Brandon, you said you'd seen it. I know Margot Robbie is getting a lot of attention for her role as Harley Quinn. And she got a lot of my attention for not consistently sticking to an accent the entire time. Brandon, do you have any general opinions about the movie?
A lot more positive than you.
I mean, I can say something. Joel Kinnaman was awesome, too. I thought Joel Kinnaman was awesome. Amanda Waller is always great, but yeah.
I thought Amanda brought the
Viola
movie
Davis.
To us. Yeah, Viola Davis, who's usually fantastic in everything she does. I thought she didn't have enough in this movie to really be considered a threat. She's a murderer, yeah. But she wasn't necessarily frightening as she should have been. Joel Kinnaman is definitely fantastic for what the role was. And he's really, like, I didn't even know his name last year, or hell, a couple months ago. But between this and House of Cards, that guy's really talented.
He's great, right? I mean, like, I think the first thing I never saw The Killing, or the first thing I saw him in was the RoboCop remake, and I was like, why did they cast this skinny, weird-looking dude? And you're just like, wow, there's just something about him really, like, verisimilitude. You really believe he's the guy that's on there.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking during House of Cards, I said, what superhero movie is he going to be cast in? And lo and behold, it's Suicide Squad. I think there was another movie I saw. Oh, he was in Safe House. I remember him from Safe House.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought Harley's, granted, I'm not from New York, but, you know, I feel like...
Neither was that accent, if it makes sense.
That's not a New York accent from most of the trailers that I've seen.
It was a Brooklyn accent, to me.
Well, it's the, hey, Mr. J, but it's like the old-timey radio accent, but it's also like she didn't have it half the movie.
I thought she was fine. Her and Will Smith, Harley and Deadshot, were the only characters to care about. Those were the performances that stood out. I thought it was really great that they gave, I'm blanking on his name now.
Slipknot. I'm just kidding.
Slipknot.
Tell me the great standout role Slipknot did.
I definitely don't want to spoil anything, so I'll keep it brief. They gave a certain character who's never done anything in the comics a complete story here, and I thought it was very nice and sweet that they did that.
I can sort of assume.
You talk about Diablo. That's right. That's not a spoiler. I mean, Jay Hernandez. Like the third lead. That's the thing too. Okay, and I hate to say it, Jay Hernandez was doing this like Mexican gangster accent the whole time. Was real fake. I mean, it was like they started shooting the movie. It's like everybody do a really exaggerated accent, and Will Smith's like, I'm not doing that. But everybody started shooting, so they had to kind of stop halfway through shooting, doing these crazy ass accents, and you know, like sometimes Flag sounds a little Southern, and it's just like it was really, really strange, really strange. I appreciate that people really like Diablo and stuff, but I mean,
I've heard this character was stand out also for a character that wasn't even marketed like in any of the.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah,
that's why it stood out.
I think that's why Pete exactly.
Performance well, because it was not marketed at all.
Didn't expect it. I think that's why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys bring it up. I mean, it's still sitting right now with from what I just looked up right now. 326 million worldwide. So it's a hit. You know,
it's actually supposed to get another. I'm sorry, Frank.
No problem.
It's supposed to get another 54 million this weekend domestic, I think.
Yeah.
So like that's impressive.
Yeah. It's hitting all the numbers. I mean, yes, the critics are divided. A lot of people are calling this movie horrendous names online, especially don't look at Rotten Tomatoes, but
I don't know anyone who reads Rotten Tomatoes, who votes on Rotten Tomatoes, and the same thing goes for like generally reviews. I mean, outside of you guys who do podcasts and guys who you know live and die by Red Letter Media, I don't know anyone that like cares. Like when they go see a movie, it's generally because the trailer was fun.
No, it does cause word. The mouth drop off, and I think especially something like Suicide Squad, it's doing well now, and the drop off isn't that bad, but you know the kind of closest comparison is something like Guardians of the Galaxy, which had great word of mouth, and the drop off on that was like non-existent. I mean, and it's kind of funny because you look at something like Batman versus Superman, which got about the same kind of reaction and made a ton more money, but was considered kind of a real bomb out, and then this is something. I mean, obviously it's the nature of the material, it's like a bunch of characters that necessarily wouldn't be expected to lead a movie, but it's not doing as well as that, and it's bombing a little.
I think you can. I don't think you can compare
harder than that. And yeah, so I think.
But
right. I think critical consensus tends to actually represent audience consensus often than not.
I would say, critics are there for a reason. They give you a straight outline, but again, it's up to the audience, it's up to you not to just be swayed by what other people tell you, but take that into consideration and then still make up your own mind and watch it for yourself if you want to, and give it your own opinion, give it your own rating. Again, your rating just means what you enjoyed and what you brought out of it and how it affected you. But again, go out there. Don't just listen to everyone else, and just make sure that you're watching for your reasons. And if you liked it, you liked it. If you don't, you don't. It's bottom line is your call as to how you feel about a property that is being that you want to see, and if you want to put your time and effort into.
Well, if you're moving on, you're moving on. But yeah. I was going to say, in defense of the idea of critics and stuff, I think the thing is people don't always have time or money to see a movie. I mean, like, there are certain movies that I try to see all the super movies, try to see all the big movies, try to see all the ones I hear are good. But once in a while, I'm pumped about a movie, and then the consensus will come out. It's like, it sucks. And I'm like, yeah, man, I don't want to pay for the babysitter. I don't want to pay for the $50 movie tickets to sit through a movie where he's telling me sucks. I mean, there is – that does affect the response. And I think it's more like – It more represents the audience and stuff. So I think there is a usefulness to critical reviews. Like I said, I'm someone who thought Batman vs. Superman was great, and I completely disagree with the consensus on that. But then I did recognize that Suicide Squad was total trash. So, like, I agree with the consensus on that. So, you're right. You make your own decision. But, I mean, in the defense, it's like, sometimes we don't have the option to see the movies. So,
I feel like reviews are only for people that share the same opinion generally, like if you share the same opinion with this person 99% of the time, then of course the review is going to be helpful. But I don't think I could look at the consensus of reviews and think, oh, well, this movie's going to be trash, I shouldn't waste my time. Because then, Shakespeare in Love is a shitty movie, but it won Best Picture,
Was that one done by Roland Emmerich?
I don't think so. Roland Emmerich did a Shakespeare movie?
Yeah, he did.
I don't know. When I saw Shakespeare in Love, I definitely didn't care who the hell was directing it.
Anyway.
No, that was John Madden who directed Shakespeare.
John Madden. Yes. It was a different movie that he was on. Anyway.
We'll
move on. Speaking of reviews, we're gonna talk about reviews. Also, Naim, how you doing?
Hey.
Glad you can join us.
Yeah, me too.
So I've been reading Justice. I don't want to besmirch your feelings. You sound down, so I'm gonna try to cheer you up with my thoughts on Justice League. Is that cool?
It didn't cheer me up with Suicide Squad. Anyway, all right, yeah, Justice League.
Heyo.
So Justice League was one of the titles done into the Rebirth line recently. So Justice League has a new, not a new writer. He was already working on Justice League of America before this, but it's Brian Hitch. Brian Hitch pretty much started off the Justice League brand, Rebirth brand, with a with his typical Buster-esque, stakes that he normally does for his storylines. Very big action, very big, sort of like the group having to face off against something over, like, domineering, something huge, something bigger than them. Brian Hitch is very much. A master of writing some stories like this, a mysterious plot and a mysterious enemy, not completely 100% known by the Justice League, but they have to face against it. And the first storyline pretty much brings the team together with the introduction of the 352 Superman, and also the introduction of the two new Green Lanterns on the block, folding into the Justice League, having Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz. And Rebirth itself is a fun read. It's very much again, hits all the notes of of almost summer blockbuster action. Giant spaceship, aliens controlling the masses, the League having to be more, not larger than life, but in the throes of it all. And I liked it. I like it a lot. Even though it pretty much ends sort of abruptly, but it jumps into the beginning of Justice League itself. So Justice League number one, with the team having to deal with a giant crisis, having to deal with the I'm forgetting the enemy, what the enemy's called. And I know you read the book. Do you remember the enemy? What the enemy's called?
Oh, crap! I know who you're talking about. Was it Kinship or something along? Let me look that up.
It's I believe they're called like the 100 or something like that, something along those lines. But it's going past that, it's again interesting having like this overall mystery of scale of that size that's intriguing me. And also the repertoire between the two Green Lanterns in the book with Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz, being the new kids on the block, comparatively to like, you know, the Flash, Batman, Cyborg, especially Cyborg, who has now, you know, become a full on member of the Justice League since the beginning of the New 52. And just seeing like, you know, certain aspects, Flash always talking to Jessica Cruz, but not talk to Simon Baz. Is sort of something that I'm noticing and wondering if, like, why is it being done intentionally?
The kindred.
Thank you. I knew it sounded sort of like close to the 100, but yeah, the kindred.
Yeah, the 100 is on CW.
Listen, we only talk about certain CW shows, and that would be The Flash, Legend of Tomorrow, the other one with the bow. Is it called Bow? I think it's called Bow.
I think it's called. Never mind. Supergirl. Don't forget about Supergirl.
Green Arrow, Beauregard.
But yeah, so it's you know, it's an interesting storyline, which I'm very much liking. Like, you know, I like most of all like what Brian Hitch does. Like, he's very good at this, again repeating myself, but this summer blockbuster stuff. Calden, what do you think? I know you only read the first issue, but how are you feeling about the book itself?
Well, I think it was, for a first issue, a solid introduction to the characters. Everyone got a little bit of time to shine. We got to see how they react to a group crisis, you know, like worldwide natural disasters, and they each handle it a different way based on their powers.
No, I'm sorry. You read the Rebirth number one, or you read Justice League number one?
Justice League number one.
Okay.
But just their whole, like, working together. Like, I liked how the Green Lanterns were, like, just holding together a city with their constructs. And, of course, you know, Aquaman was handling his home turf because, you know, he's the king. He has to. The Flash just used super speed to save people at rapid succession, you know. It's always nice to, you know, like, for a first issue to, like, give just a brief overview of, like, what are these characters for someone new, and what is their thing? What do they do? And how do they, you know, speak and act?
Mm-hmm.
So that I felt it was solid. The villain group intrigues me because, you know, the idea of these, like, I guess bugs or parasites are infecting people and turning them into this single hive mind consciousness that wants to take the surface, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
It's not entirely clear on the first issue, but there's definitely something weird going on. They want their words back.
Yeah, that's something that intrigues me. Again, Brian Hitch is very good at giving a weird like mystery over something very simple as we want our words back. Like, what does that mean? Like, what does that entail? Like, what would it, like seeing like, you know, seeing how this mystery, you know, unfolds is like, you know, very much like, you know, the core of the story, just like in the storyline he was doing before this one, which was Justice League of America, when Hal Jordan was, you know, in the team, having to deal with Ra'al, the sun god, the Kryptonian sun god, and that was a mystery that, you know, that again wasn't finished because Rebirth hit, and but we will eventually get the three final books for that series later on, so DC Comics says. But
you know, I just had a great mental image of you go to their nest and it's DC Comics offices. You got Didio as the queen on the wall.
I want our words back. Yeah, that would be interesting. What do you think of the artwork, Tony? You know, Tony Daniel.
You know, I've always found Tony Daniel to be a fairly good artist. I mean, it's competently drawn. You know, you can tell who the characters are. The action's fairly good. You know, for what it is, of course, you know, it's more saving than fighting. But I appreciate that. You know, a superhero has to prioritize saving people over combat.
That's good. I mean, I always love Brian Hitch when he draws his own stuff. Like, and in the Rebirth number one issue was very much like written and drawn by him, with Daniel Enrique doing the. But yeah, Tony Daniel's like hitting it out of the park. I normally love his work. He normally does really good composition. Does really good, like, you know, he's very much trying to be in league with what Brian Hitch normally does, which is very wide shots and very a lot of backgrounds and a lot of, like, you know, establishing shots, like, to show the scale of what's happening. And so that's very much, you know, it's very, again, very movie-esque when he does it. And again, very happy to see him, like, you know, like going into that sandbox and becoming, like, you know, bigger and wider. But I'll give it a buy. I will definitely see, like, you know, want to see what's going on. I'll give, you know, if anyone listening wants to, like, check out Justice League right now, again, it does have the two two major Green Lantern characters right now, you know, with Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. I'll give it a buy to check it out if you want to, you know, extend your horizon into more Green Lantern, you know, territory. What do you say, Colm?
I would definitely recommend getting it. I mean, it's a solid start, and, you know, if at least give it a shot for like 2-3 issues and see if you like it. And if you do, great, you got a new ongoing book. If not, well, you know to avoid it.
Okay.
Justice League's gonna be your flagship title of DC typically, so you know it's going to be a. They're gonna try to put some effort into it usually.
True. All right, so I guess we're gonna move on to our two Green Lantern titles that's happening right now with Green Lanterns and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. I assume everybody read the, you know, the material.
Oh yeah.
All right, cool.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're gonna start with Green Lanterns, part 4 of Rage Planet. Still written by Sam Humphries, you know, he's penciled by Ed Benes, Robson Rocha, and Tom Derenick. It is a filler issue, I would say. I mean, it gives you a lot of what's going on, a lot of character development between the two characters. They're finally, you know, getting a chance to speak to one another with Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. They're finally getting to, like, you know, the core of what, you know, what makes the other character tick a bit. You know, trying to understand each other, you know, better. But it is very much a filler. It's very much just the like, you know, what the in between time of, you know, getting to know one another. You know, the story parts, the story moments of hey, I'm always scared. You don't have to be scared alone. I don't know what I'm doing half the time, even though I'm acting like I do know what I'm doing. You know, it's very much like trying to let all the facades of, you know, the bravado of Simon Baz go down and letting Jessica Cruz let another character in. So, like, even though she's saying she's, you know, she's a failure, she shouldn't have the ring, that she'll give up the ring, but Simon's convincing her to, like, no, to keep it. So it's very much like, you know, a team building moment, and it's done fairly well for the most part. There's some good moments, you know, some good artwork moments here and there. Even though, again, it has three pencilers, there's some nice emotions, like, coming from the characters. You know, there's fairly good expressions happening between. I liked it for the most part. I mean, I'll give it a read. I want to give it a borrow. Like, yeah, I want to give it a buy. But it is pretty solid for what it is. Yeah, I liked it. Brandon, what do you think?
Good stuff. First of all, that's a cop out, Frank. You got to pick one.
Listen, buddy. I come up with my own rules. And I say borrow.
There you go. Yeah, I thought they did an okay job. Ed Benes is not... I mean, look, we've been doing this for like over 100...
Good, is the word you're looking for. Not
We've been doing this a long time, and we've seen... I think the worst I've seen Ed Benes was... when Dwayne McDuffie was doing Justice League. But this is definitely okay. It's okay. You know, I think
it's passable, right? It's
right. Passable. I think Ed and I think, what is it, Thomas Darren, they did a decent job of mimicking Roach's style just enough to where it's passable. It's not as horrible as issue 2 was. And I think they did a pretty good job art wise. Of keeping the look and feel of the book consistent. And the story was good. Like, we had some great character moments. We had Jessica completely going off her rocker, and we had Simon trying to be the level-headed one when through 3 issues he's been the exact opposite. That's good writing. Could it have been written better? Sure, absolutely.
I mean, to be completely honest, I'm sorry to cut you off. There were some cheesy parts in it. I mean, there's some ham-fisted writing, but it's all right.
I never got cheese. I didn't get a cheesy vibe. I thought the art suffered. I thought there were some really cool moments that the art didn't bring the best out of. Like when it dawns on Simon that a hell tower wouldn't reach to the sky, it would plummet to the earth. Like, that's genius. That's a genius moment. Like, it's one of those things where you take it for granted that a writer comes up with a hell tower that plummets through the earth. Like, that should bring about the badass, like, one of those moments we don't forget about, you know? Like, if Mogo explodes, we remember it. If a Hell Tower is penetrating the Earth's core, we should be like, oh my god, look at this. But that's one of the issues Ed Benes cannot do. But I thought we had some good moments between Jessica and Simon, and it made for a really entertaining issue for me.
Yeah, you give it a buy?
Definitely a buy. Buy.
Okay. All right, Eric, what do you think of the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I had a very different reaction than Brandon. I think the Benes art was bad. I don't know. I don't feel like he didn't mention it, but he drew Simon wrong for some reason. Like, what was the deal with the extended shoulders the whole time? Again, the art split up between the different guys, it really stands up. But the Robson Rocha art, I think, was the strongest stuff, I think. But even saying that, I think that one page where he has the crazy guardian lifting the little boy up, and he has this humongous info dump, which is meant to be kind of more like fun and sassy. I think that kind of just it draws the weaknesses of the issue out. And I think essentially it's a very dramatic issue featuring characters having a very long extended conversation about emotional depth. And it's super one dimensional. I mean, there's nothing we're really learning about the characters, nothing we're really getting out of the characters that we haven't gotten in the last couple of issues. And it's kind of exemplified in that one panel where that should have been broken up as a more playful panel. We didn't need all that information in one shot. It doesn't add to that at all. You just kind of stop. You can't even enjoy the image because you're just too worried about the download of text right next to it, you know? And then I think even at the end, there's a bit where Simon makes a bad joke and they let the panel breathe for a bit to show Jessica react to try to get a punchline joke out of it. But it's like that just points out the fact that how much of a deluge the information the rest of the issue is. I think the conversation between Jessica and Simon was super cliche. I don't think the characters are any different than they've been the whole – Jessica's the entire monologue, the last three issues, like, I suck, I shouldn't be Lantern, I suck, I shouldn't be Lantern, I suck, I shouldn't be Lantern. And then his entire monologue, the whole issue has been like, you know, am I good enough to fix her? Am I good enough to fix her? Am I good enough to be Lantern? And so they basically just verbalize the stuff they've been monologuing about internally the entire series. Now,
what's wrong
on the one
with
hand,
that?
On the one hand, that had to happen because that's the only way to only get the characters past where they were. On the other hand, it's not anything new, and there's no reason we as an audience should suffer through the information repeated ad nauseum just until the characters tell each other. You know, so it's not fun for us. It didn't add anything to their understanding of each other. Essentially, he's like, I hate myself too. And she's like, I guess I could still be Green Lantern. I mean, what was the growth? What was the difference from point A to point B? You know, they like each other a little better. He admitted he didn't like her. She knows he didn't like her. You know, it was a necessary part of the story, but told in the most filler possible way.
But it is very much part of his character, seeing that in the previous issue, he's able to, with Belize, just by telling her, yeah, I also did something bad one time.
Yeah, and then even then, there's a bit where he looks like his ring is the drama of his ring being about to run out of energy is interesting, but they don't set it up enough because his ring is running out of energy, and I'm like, are we back to the timing thing or are we back to the energy thing? Because does that mean that she has full power? And then she starts using rage power. I'm like, oh, so like halfway through the issue, after you spend page after page after page telling me, oh, his ring is going down, it's dangerous. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, she has firepower, so actually, he is in trouble. And then the fight's nothing. The fight is her making the same pose and him yelling at her, her yelling at him. And then he's like, I'm going to try that thing where I cure her. And then he just doesn't. There's just like a huge splash page where they're just doing the same thing they do in the last 10 pages, which is they open their mouths wide at each other and just get each other's faces. This is, I think, the danger of this kind of biweekly format, where the writer is writing this as decompressed as possible, but still trying to fill up the pages. It feels like I'm reading a comic from the mid-90s where no one was really caring what they were putting out. It was really disappointing. I think it killed all the character momentum where it really could have done something different. I mean, essentially, when the characters are telling me how they feel for, you know, four issues, when they finally come out and say it, there should be some kind of revelatory moment. There should be some kind of turnaround and stuff. Essentially, Simon, in the first issue, Hal is like, you know, hey, Simon, you're a little too up your own ass because of your self-loathing. Hey, Jessica, you hate yourself. You guys are so similar. You should work together. And it's like they've learned the same lesson so many times. We didn't need to stop a whole issue and do it, and especially because, like, this was supposed to be the resolution. Like, their conversation was supposed to be the resolution of her getting the Red Lantern out. The rules aren't very clear. It just – and then the most embarrassing thing out of the whole thing is the last page where they go to the top and Atrocitus is like, and now fight each other to the death to see who will join us. I'm like, that's the cliffhanger for the last like two issues. So I mean, like, how lazy can you be as a writer? Just really disappointing, really disappointing, really, really bad. Plus, how come Simon's costume is still there when his ring runs out? That thing is generated by your ring, guy. Like,
that's very arbitrary rules on terms terms of like what the costume does and does not do depending on the ring charge.
There's been
many times when the ring when the costume stays on, even if the ring has reached zero. There's many times when the ring when it runs out and you're back to whatever the hell you were wearing prior to that.
Right, much like how
Guy Gardner was left in his skivvies like last time because he's never changed that goddamn costume out.
Right, and then there when I think when Kyle died, his costume stayed on his body. And
yeah.
But I mean, Jeff John just set the general hard and fast rule that every time his ring ran out, the costume would come off.
But he also set the rule that, you know, the black is like not real material, but it's like the emptiness of like matter or something. It's like, you know,
sure, but I mean also
it's cloth that gets broken in a fight. It's like, you know, it's the rules are arbitrary when it comes to the costume. We don't really need to get into it, like, you know,
right, but also I mean, like, it's also he's glowing, so like it's just and it's the same thing as like his shoulders being off. It's one of those kind of like nitpicky little things that gets lost in the story, but it's just, I don't know, I didn't really see any difference when he had the ring on when he had it off and stuff. I will say
the part that you were talking about earlier with the Guardian explaining, you know, info dumping a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know. It felt to me like Robson Rocha wanted to do a splash page and did not want to do a bunch of different pages, like a bunch of different panels or two pages explain, you know, having that explain to like let it breathe more. It felt like I want to do this weird splash page with the kids like flying in the air and have this dude do that and I'm done. So yeah.
That page was at Bendis though.
That page was
that. Oh, that's Rocha.
Is that Rocha?
Oh, that's Rocha. That's Rocha.
No. Yeah, really? I think it's Bendis.
I think the page before that was Bendis. You're right.
I think they're both
those pages. All the Family House pages are Robson Rocha. You can tell just by the way the faces look at stuff.
Right. I just mean, I think right before that.
Oh, anyway. So, Eric, what do you give it?
I think the problem is you have to read it because it culminates their conflict, but I think ultimately I feel like they're going to relitigate this conflict through the entire series. So total pass.
Okay, total pass. All right. I also wanted to say the final page with Atrocitus sort of weird to me because I feel like most of those characters are dead, but now they're back. I mean, yes, Rebirth happens, so you know, negates a lot of stuff, but I feel like two out of the five characters in the background have died.
It's their brother.
Huh?
It's the third brother.
It's his identical cousin.
Can I just say something super quick? There's a bit in the beginning where Simon says, "Oh, Jessica's usually a nervous wreck. I miss that." And I'm like, that's the kind of problem I'm saying at the beginning of the series. She should have been a nervous wreck. At no point did she seem like a nervous wreck, except like she couldn't make a construct. She's super duper fucking confident for someone who locked herself in a room for 3 years. Like, it's just completely, completely wrong. Sorry, I'm done.
All right, Colton, what do you think of the issue?
Well, to follow up that. Honestly, it wasn't a perfect issue, but I did most of the part enjoy it. Honestly, one of the things I enjoyed the most was actually the little character moments, like not just the Green Lanterns, but like the side characters, the family, you know, Simon Baz's family and their interactions with the former not quite Guardian. Does he have a name?
Honestly, I can't tell you.
Well, Mr. Blue, as he is, I enjoyed the little character moments like that, and it was nice trying to see him like work with Jessica and her whole thing, you know, just, it was definitely, it was a nice character moment. And I appreciate that. Cause let's be honest, sometimes in comics you get a point where it's like, okay, we've spent like 27 pages fighting and we haven't really, you know, talked or grown as characters or anything. I think it's not perfect. It's a little rough and roughshod, but you know, compared to some stuff I've read, it's definitely a step up and I do appreciate those moments. That said, you know, throwing the deathmatch after deathmatch, I agree with Eric there. It's getting a little worn thin, but maybe they'll do something different with it. We'll have to see.
Okay, so what do you give it?
I would definitely say a borrow or rent, something along those lines.
Okay, as Brandon apparently pointed out, you can only have one of those. So borrow or rent.
Oh, what's the difference?
Yeah, right? Right, Brandon? What is the difference?
You can't borrow something if you rent it. Borrowing is like free, and renting.
I give it a matinee. All
right, we're done with this, Brandon. Name. What do you got?
So I would agree with that this was sort of fillery, which is weird because the previous issue seemed almost like it seems like these two issues could have been one issue, and maybe if this was a monthly book, they would have been one issue. Because you know it could have been the first half is what happened in that issue, which seemed to be paced slowly, and then this was paced slowly as an issue. Which I think, as Eric was saying, is sort of a problem with the two-a-month format or every other week format. I can't even tell if Robson Roach is good anymore because I can't even, like, what did he pencil, like, six pages here? And maybe it's because there's six inkers in addition to the three pencilers on this issue. And like nobody penciled their own work on this issue, which like, you know, I think in the previous issue, at least of the three or four pencilers, at least one of them inked themselves. We do not get that here. So it's just, yeah, it's kind of a mess as far as art goes. Because, I mean, you know, I think Brandon said it seemed to be consistent with itself, but I don't really think it really was. Like, even Rocha didn't seem all that consistent with himself.
I swear, I think he only did about four pages in his book.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, they spend the entire series, the entire issue is spent on these generic-ass rocks. So I think that's the trick. They're like, maybe we just put him next to rocks. No one's going to care that I'm not drawing. I'm just kind of copy-pasting.
Yeah, I did want to say, not to cut you off, like the weirdness about the artwork in the book, and the way the story pacing is, like, goes, it's weird that the Hell Tower isn't really that big of a deal. Like it's like a superficial background. It's like, oh, but there's a Hell Tower.
Yeah.
Do we explore it more? I mean, they I thought they were gonna do that when they got trapped in the cavern. I thought they were gonna be more of like,
yeah, the Hell Tower, and inside the Hell Tower it's Boo's stomach from Dragon Ball Z.
It's weird that they don't go deeper, especially like, you know, especially having made Simon say, oh, it's a Hell Tower that descends to the earth. You would think, like, you know, descending to the earth would be your call. That this is where your character have to go.
I didn't even remember that it was a friggin' Hell Tower. I just thought they fell in the hole in the ground.
Yeah, like they go down. I thought they were, yeah, thought they were that's embarrassing. Explore. I thought there was gonna be more like a repertoire between the two characters having to go down deeper into the tower to, you know, to like get to the core of the issue. Because, you know, I thought that's how it was gonna go. You're gonna get deep into the core of yourselves and the issue, like, you know, what's happening. But no, they actually went like, no, we're gonna escape and go up, you know, go up the top and then meet, you know, Atrocitus and his gang of, you know, 2 feet grinning dudes. I mean, seriously, his entire squad is just nothing but teeth. Anyway, Name, you can continue.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, a little bit back on the art real quick is that I feel like there's no style guide, like, between artists of, like, what characters necessarily look like. Like, Jessica looks different from artist to artist. Simon looks different when Ed Benes draws him. At some point, Simon Baz has no nose, which is, you know, a thing that had always been a problem with, I know, Kyle Rayner's Crab mask, but this is a regular mask. Like, this is basically a Domino mask, except also...
You can even extrapolate that from Doug Monkey when he drew Simon Baz for the first time. His when he made the mask was pretty much shapeless. It became like just straight down and nose disappear.
That wasn't necessarily a good thing either, but whatever. I don't know. It's characters look inconsistent from page to page, panel to panel. The coloring seems to be inconsistent too. Like, sometimes it looks really good and sometimes it's like, oh, I think we're just like, sometimes it's like muted in a reasonable way, and sometimes it's like we're gonna like go all out as if like they're in, I don't know. And I guess some part of it is they're being lighted by their rings, but it's still just, it seems inconsistent again from panel to panel, page to page. And the story, like I said, seems like this could have happened in 11 pages in the previous issue, and the previous issue could have also been 11 pages. So yeah, total, I'd probably give this a borrow as well. Only because like I'm on the verge of giving it a pass, but I feel like, you know, enough things happen that I feel like, all right, well, maybe at least borrow it. But yeah, I'm
a begrudging borrow.
A begrudging borrow, yeah.
Okay.
Verging on pass.
Okay.
The cat joke was pretty funny.
Okay,
shit, it's corny. It was so corny.
Let's talk about, like, you know, true meat and potatoes of that issue. Does the cover get you guys? You know, when he's driving the car. You know, again, living one charge, one quarter charge at a time.
You got that. You got the Fast and the Furious cover. Yeah, I didn't want to get it either because I didn't like it as much, but I had to because I just don't stop making it. I told my wife, like, oh man, I was on Green Lantern podcast. I was, you live a life quarter better in time. She didn't laugh at it either. So someone's gonna laugh at it one day.
Hey guys, before we talk about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 2, I am obligated legally to tell you about Audible.com. That's right. Audible.com sponsors this here very show. I didn't pull up the Audible ad read before I started talking, and I don't even see the email right now. Here it is. For you, the listeners of the Green Lantern Corps podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I recommend, last time I recommended How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, today I'm recommending The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. It's by Glenn Weldon, written by and narrated by the author, Glenn Weldon, who you might have heard of if you listen to NPR at all. He writes about books and comic books for the NPR website, and is also on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, which is where I first heard of him. This is a book about sort of Batman, but again, it's a lot like How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, except sort of about Batman. So it's about how Batman shaped our culture and how, you know, how people think about Batman. And it's sort of the rise of nerd culture looked at sort of a lens of Batman. It's a pretty new book, and you can get it for free with your Audible membership. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/lanterns, where you can pick this or any other great audiobook. You can pick up How Star Wars Conquered the Universe or Caped Crusade or something else that you find on Audible. There's many, many options to choose from. Over 180,000, in fact. So that's, once again, audibletrial.com/lanterns for your free audiobook. Now back to you, Frank.
All right, so we're going to move on to Hal Jordan, The Green Lantern Corps, number 2. Sinestro's Law, Part 2, Recon, written by Robert Benedetti and penciled by Rafa Sandoval. Did I get the name right?
Nope.
Rafa Sandoval.
Really not hard.
Come on, man. I want to say Sandoval. Right. Are you sure it's Sandoval?
Yes.
Has anyone said his name outright?
I've just Sandoval. Seen that name said, that's all.
Okay, Rafa Sandoval. Is that cool?
Just say Sandoval, it's fine.
It's not hard to say.
Sandoval.
There you go. Is that fine? I want to call
Robert Duvall.
Whatever.
Colton.
So this issue pretty much continues from the first issue, where Hal Jordan has taken it upon himself to figure out what happened to the Green Lantern Corps since last. And pretty much what he's doing is stomping on two Sinestro Corps members on a space station, which he randomly chose at random to ask a bunch of goons where the Green Lantern Corps has gone, and getting no answers is pretty much shaking down three head and Acid Body. I think it's Acid Body. I have no idea what these guys' names are. You know, scary looking Green Sinestros. Also having Sinestro explain to Serenic his reasoning as to why she was made leader of the Sinestro Corps, having the fact that she could give them a legitimacy that he could not, because his name strikes terror in the universe or whatever. Also the fact that he could heal himself at any given point in time and with Parallax, but needed her to feel the fear of losing her father before they can, you know, make amends, which is a real shitty thing for Sinestro to do to his own kid. You know, worse than killing Kyle's mom. But
surprise, Sinestro's terrible person.
Oh, did he
person.
Do that? I forget. Did he do that?
Did he kill Kyle's mom? Yeah, he totally killed Kyle's mom.
Was that retconned out?
Did he anymore? Does Kyle even have a mom anymore?
Does Kyle even have a mom?
Did he just spontaneously appear out of the ether? Or is he like Irish again?
To me, Kyle's mom was still killed by a Sinestro parasite on Sinestro's order. All right?
I can't wait till there's like a random issue where it's like, oh yeah, Kyle's eating pizza with his mom and
like,
his
mom,
dad.
I'm
they
so
never
glad
like been together the whole time.
I'm so glad you've never died and are, you know, and I'm just a space Jesus. Anyway.
His white red haired dad, Aaron Rayner.
Oh yeah, wait, the Mexican one or the not Mexican one?
Boy, anyway, curiously, does he still have the white lighter power?
Kyle Rayner, yes, he still has white lighter power. Anyway, so the issue itself, you know, again, also very fillery to me, like very much just, you know, just a bunch of standing around and nothing's really done. Hal Jordan learns like two things, which is like that the Sinestro Corps has been the new cops on the block since he's been on a renegade in the same space sector. I have no idea how he missed that, but apparently Hal Jordan not only sucks at being a space cop, but sucks at paying attention around the universe to know that the Sinestro Corps has taken over the place of the Green Lanterns. It's real weird. I mean, the most interesting parts about the story to me have to be the Green Lantern Corps elements. The fact that, you know, they're in a sector of space that has been uncharted. They're pretty much, there's only, I forget the exact number of
Green Lanterns. 398, I think.
398 living Green Lantern members left out of 7,200. So the Green Lanterns are very much, you know, in dire straits, and they need to like pull themselves together again. They're against the universe has turned their backs on them, and they're pretty much like Hal Jordan is running around, you know, pretty much taking everyone by the bootstraps and throwing them against walls until he figures out what happened to the Green Lantern Corps. Nothing again. It doesn't promote anything about that Emerald Sight thing that happened when Parallaxic took over Sinestro's body, and Hal Jordan had a vision flash or whatever. But yeah, that hasn't really been dived into this issue. It's very much like very a bunch of talking heads. So you know, motivations being told, Sinestro still being like, "Oh my, curse Hal Jordan," and twirls his mustache. It's, you know, there's not much goes on. It is well drawn. I gotta say that. Like I do love Rafa's art style. It's very well drawn. That Sinestro, there's a moment where Sinestro like has his flowing cape open and there's just a bunch of lighting effects and it looks great. Who did the colors for this book?
That was Tomoyu More. Tomoyu More.
Oh, yeah, he does a really like good job with it, especially like, you know, there's that one section where Hal does the Ferris, like Ferris
semi-truck.
Yes, yeah, semi-truck with a fuel truck. He like and he smashes like three head with, and it's the coloring for that was really good, really spot on. It's beautiful to look at, very good artwork. Heads and shoulders above what's going on in Green Lanterns right now. But yeah, not that much. Just Hal Jordan being Hal Jordan, punching dudes in the face and you know, expecting answers. So yeah, I give it a read, but yeah, like a begrudging read. I'd say like bordering borrow. But yeah, it's a good just for the artwork alone.
So is that a buy or a borrow?
It's still a buy. It's a begrudging buy. Like gotcha. I said, bordering on.
Right. Well, you said read bordering on borrow, and I'm like, wait, was read?
Was I add borrow to it?
You said read for borrow before, and I'm saying read for buy. I'm very confused.
Sorry. So read, begrudging read, bordering on borrow. I'm sorry.
I think we have to read it. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's.
But it's buy borrow pass.
Listen, we're not getting bogged down on this freaking on these semantics of what how we're rating these things. All right. I enjoyed it. I say read it. That's where I try to, okay. I say read it.
Indigo Lanterns, everyone.
Nine, what do you say? What's your take?
Yeah, well, I'll start by giving this an absolute buy, and it's I will agree on some of the story elements being like, all right, like, you know, people are just learning things, it's moving slowly, but I would have read every issue of Francis Manapul's Flash run just because of the Francis Manapul art. And if Rafa Sandoval continues to draw like this and Tomoyu More continues to do colors like this, then every issue of this will be, and any issue that looks like this is going to be instantaneously a buy. I think the art looks really good. I think the colors are fantastic. I think Sandoval got a personal inker who sort of gets his style. So he does, you know, you don't have sort of those issues of an inker who sort of, you know, loses some of the detail of an artist. There's some stuff here that I think works really well for me as somebody who hadn't read Green Lantern in a while. As for example, like learning some of the stuff about Sinestro, like, oh, he was dying and blah, 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 blah. Like, that stuff I didn't really get as much previously. By the way, there's definitely when Sorenik Sinestro, the bubble that says FAP, and we're going for. But
is that really something we have to like point out? Okay,
absolutely something I have to point out. The whole sort of everything Hal does is fighting these two guys until like two pages before the end of the issue, and it's like, oh yeah, now this is happening, which all seemed like, all right, we need to fill pages, so let's fill it with the fight. But it all looked great, so like, you know, and I think, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget that comics are a visual medium, and that's why David Finch still has a job, because people forget that. But I don't Why am I just? He didn't even do anything to me today. Like, anyway.
That would imply that his art would have his art is good, and that's the problem. It's like
no, that's what I'm saying.
Are you throwing throwing shade at David Fincher right now?
No, that's what I said. Like, why did I do that? Like, he didn't even like. I didn't even read like a bad David Fincher thing recently.
Are you trying to? I just
called David Fincher. Like,
no? Yeah, you trying to cause some beef between us now? You trying to get?
Oh, I have plenty. Listen, we've listened to previous episodes. I have plenty of beef with David Finch. I'm sure he's a perfectly nice man. I think the art really shines through and for me forgives a lot of the faults of necessarily the storytelling. And maybe if everybody was as good an artist as Rafa Sandoval is, then this issue would have had a lower rating, but because the art looks so good, I'm giving it a buy.
Yeah. His creature designs in this book was freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
Colton, what do you think?
Well, I definitely enjoyed it. I like this. Honestly, the Sinestro moments were some of the better ones. I mean, it's kind of nice to just set up like it. You know, you think, oh, he's just an ordinary old man. He just gotten sick, and right? It's like, no, he's a manipulative son of a bitch. I mean, seriously, it's clever, but at the same time, he is a dick, and it's gonna bite him in the ass when his daughter betrays him, and we all know it. But it's gonna be fun to see it when that moment finally happens, and he gets his smug smile punched out by her. But until then, you know, the whole parallax thing, and he'd probably, you know, break her arm or something. I'm interested to see where this is going with Hal versus Sinestro, because he had that thing going on where he was, like, all phantomy, and I seem to recall vaguely something about people thinking Hal was becoming a god or something in past books. I don't know what that was about.
Because of the gauntlet and Hal joined the Renegade storyline, which is now done with. I don't think that's going to be happening in this book.
But
I mean,
still,
I
something is clearly has happened to Hal because he's having visions.
True.
And he forged his own ring, which may have special features we don't know yet. And it's just, there's a lot of interest there. A part of me is disappointed because I kind of hope that this would become like an almost reverse of the whole thing where like he just snaps, tired of all the shit, the Green Lantern's gone, all that stuff. So he just goes around ripping rings off the fingers of Yellow Lantern and just going power mad over it to fight Sinestro. That would have been like the perfect route for me because I would have just found that amazing.
So
just
a new
cackling and saying full ring Hal.
So a new Emerald Twilight is what you want?
Basically like, the parallax he was before, but with Yellow Lantern energy when he destroys the battery. Okay. And that is parallax Sinestro versus him.
Okay, so what do you give this this book?
My fantasies aside, I generally did enjoy the book. The art, like I said, was gorgeous. It was really done well. I definitely thought the writing was good. I mean, the pacing was honestly the worst part about this book. It definitely could have sped up a little, or at least been a more dynamic fight. But that said, I definitely would give it a buy because I found it my most enjoyable read of this week.
Okay. Brandon, what do you think?
Enough cannot be said about Rafa Sandoval.
Enough can't be said, but what can you say?
I can
this
say...
This episode, we jerk off Rafa Sandoval. Back.
Yeah, apparently he's doing it himself. I think a lot of credit definitely goes to Tomeo Mori. His colors are excellent. And I think I mentioned that last episode that if Ben didn't mention the colors in this book, and he would get his ass kicked. And he got his ass kicked. Believe that.
Did you drive to his house and kick his ass?
No, Frank. I flew
all the way across America
to Texas to beat his ass. Okay. Yeah. Coloring was great. Art was pretty damn good. The Green Lantern Corps stuff was terrible. It made absolutely no sense to send Guy Gardner off absolutely alone into an uncharted space sector looking for nothing or something. Like, that's terrible leadership. Kilowog should have called him out on that. It literally made no sense. If you're down, I don't know, what's the math on that? 7,200 to... 398. That's
399. That was like 5% basically is what they said in the book.
You got 5% of your team, and you're gonna, hey, let's sacrifice some more because fuck it, right? Like, John, you're making a great case for an article I wrote on GreenLandCorps.com. You need to die. You need to die, John Stewart. Like, it's getting to the point where I'm getting fed up with everything you do. But that was an idiotic decision. I thought it was cool that Guy Gardner enjoyed that decision because it just proves that he's idiotic. And I guess Hal kicking ass and taking names is cool. Oh, by the way, Frank, the three-headed guy, his name is Mash, two A's, and the nasty-looking being, his name is Slush with two H's.
I don't care. It's three-head and acid body.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
By the way, fun fact, Mash's favorite TV show, The West Wing.
I didn't know.
You set me up for that. I prefer MASH.
I didn't see that coming. Anyway, yeah, you guys, I really did not enjoy the story or the lack of story in this issue. Mm-hmm. But like as Naim said, the art was too good to be true. I think Eric, who's gonna speak after me, if Eric does not like this issue, which
don't put words in Eric's mouth.
Let's hear me out. If he does not like this issue, I suspect it's because he secretly has a deep, dark hatred for the Brian Bendis Spider-Man run that he claimed he loved so much. Or he really just doesn't like Talking Head issues as much as he thinks he does. And there's really no justification for anything he likes at that point. Because this issue literally gave you nothing.
Pause.
Don't just pause.
I'll wrap it up. There really is no reason to like this issue unless you're a big fan of Hal Jordan punching people, right? Mm-hmm. And Rafa Sandoval. So there's literally no reason to like this issue, but if Eric doesn't like this issue,
okay, that's enough of that.
Clear.
That's enough of that. Brandon, what do you give it? Buy, borrow, pass. Give me one of those.
Well, if I bought Green Lantern's four, then I goddamn it have to buy this one. So
buy. Okay, so it's a buy. All right, Eric.
I really want to hear what Strawman Eric has to say.
let's just Brandon, just do an impression of me and just.
I can't talk that fast.
What's it called? Okay, well, first off, just because I like Talking Heads in one place doesn't mean I like Talking Heads everywhere. It's like that's like saying, hey man, you like, right? How about you just let me spit in your mouth? It's the similar liquid consistency. No, I don't want you to piss in my mouth or spit in my mouth. So yeah, a Brian Bendis Talking Head issue is great.
But just because I like nothing but Flower doesn't mean I like Once in a Lifetime.
Just what's it called? A Brian Bendis Talking Head issue is so great because it's a Talking Head issue. And when Brian Bendis does it, it's not great because I love Talking Head issues. Filler issues can be great, like I said, a Brian Bendis run. This is something I think this works as a filler issue better than the previous Green Lanterns number four, because at least there's a little bit of action. The story moves a little bit. You can see yourself reading this in trade, and at least you get a little bit of a heads up about what's going on with the other characters. I don't have much judgment as John Stewart. I think the argument of sending Guy Gardner alone is kind of silly. And I guess it's like this whole issue is just every single scene with Guy Gardner was exactly the same. And I'm kind of super tired of it. Like, I haven't read Green Lantern comics in a couple of years, but I remember every single friggin' Peter Tomasi issue was scene after scene after scene of Guy Gardner just interrupting people and saying butts. Like, the entire characterization of Guy Gardner is he's a guy who thinks it's still funny to say butts. You know, so like every scene was like, I'm going to interrupt what you're going to say, John. Yeah, John. Like, it was very much like too much characterization, not too much an attempt at a one-dimensional characterization. And speaking of one-dimensional characterization, I don't like that like they've just given up on Sword Ignatiu now. Like, it used to be there's a little bit of conflict about her and her dad, but now it's like, oh yeah, you just need your dad's approval, lady. And it's like, since when? Like, he's a mass murderer. You're like a surgeon who didn't even know who he was. You didn't even know the guy was your dad until like a year ago, and all of a sudden you care what he's saying. So anyway, how about the Sandoval art? Some of the Sandoval art looks great. His Hal Jordan is terrible. I think if he draws the regular guys in the regular Green Lantern suits, it looks like shit. But his Sinestro looks great. The Sword Ignatiu looks super cute. That hair is adorable.
That hair is horrible.
His monsters are okay, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. And everybody's got this weird fisheye filter on them constantly. There's a lot of energy to it, though, and there's a lot of like consistency. And you can't really – hell was the guy from the last issue we were just talking about? Rocha and him. Clearly, Sandoval is the MVP. Not every page is going to look great, but when they look great, they look great. I mean, his Kilowog is awesome. I think the bit you guys were kind of complaining at the beginning with the lanterns, I think that's I had a problem with, because the premise of the first issue is that Hal is all alone versus the Empire of Sinestro, and then at the end of that issue, they're like, nah, it's not a problem. There's a bunch of Green Lanterns. But they're trying to up the stakes by saying out of the 7,200, there's less than 300, less than 400. It's kind of weird. It's like, 300 out of 7,200. And I'm like, 7,200 what? Does that mean there's always there always was a consistent rotation of 7,200 Lanterns? Does that mean 7,200 left and haven't come back? I like the idea that when that one died, the ring wasn't calibrated correctly, so it couldn't go look for a new one. That was kind of cool. It does seem kind of callous that Lantern just dies. They're all just kind of watching it happen. Like, yeah, just fuck you. Die alone downstairs, you idiot. Like, you really kind of like, whatever, you know? And plus, Guy Gardner punching a punching bag off of the chain that he made himself is not like impressive. It's like, you know, like, you're like, oh man, I beat the hell out of that guy in my imagination. It's like, not really, it's kind of meaningless, dude. But yeah, really super, super filler. I mean, you know, some of the characterization kind of moves half a step, and clearly they're setting up certain things, but it's kind of like the first issue where some of the stuff you expect to maybe take a little longer, like Sinestro finding out about Hal, happens pretty quickly. And I think John Stewart, not necessarily that he should die, they've settled in with him as the Elder Statesman character. Like, he's the straight man, like he's Cyclops. Like, you know, he's the one who's going to always have the wise intention and control the team and stuff like that. So it's interesting to see what they're like when they get together. So,
there's no wise action in sending one man out into uncharted territory.
Yeah, but there's also, the argument should be that he can't afford to lose that many people, and he's just scouting, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense to send. Ever since the Geoff Johns years, the advent of Green Lanterns having partners all the time, which they never did, it doesn't really make any sense to send a guy along. Especially, like, Kilowog makes the argument, why are you sending him? It's like, because I don't think Guy Gardner's never going to die. And it's like, it's not a good argument. Like, you know, if you're sending him because you think he's he's just so good at taking care of himself, he won't die. You just send someone else, like, you know, or with him. I mean,
Ask you this. And this goes to all of you. Do we think Venditti is smart enough to make that a character flaw for Jon Stewart? Or is that just poor writing and he just needed an excuse to get Guy Gardner alone?
No, it's just a matter of getting Guy Gardner alone. Jon Stewart's going to stand in as the wise Elder Statesman. And we're just supposed to assume that all his decisions are correct and stuff like that. But, I mean, it is a little silly when you think about it. I mean, when I read it, I didn't really think about it, you know. There's a certain sense to kind of keeping everybody as close together as they can, especially because the numbers are so small, et cetera. But if you have a couple of hundred, I mean, it doesn't really make any sense not to send anybody with them. It didn't bother me when I read it. Because it's kind of the thing they do with Green Lanterns all the time, you know? And it used to be the thing. Green Lanterns used to be one guy patrolling, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of light years of space, you know? So it's not that weird. But, you know, it does kind of not make any sense with the context. I mean, they should be – I rambled on enough about this issue. But I like the idea that they're kind of prefacing the Green Lantern Corps as they stand as like a Battlestar Galactica-type situation – where they can barely survive. The problem is, I don't quite understand why it is so dangerous for them to be out in the universe. I mean, they're kind of like acting like they have no access to resources, but like they're in the universe now, so everything should be hunky-dory. So, I don't know. It's not quite clear. Super filler. I would read it because you kind of have to as a requirement. And, you know, Sandoval's art's pretty good.
John Stewart's decision to like send out Guy Gardner to be, you know, to be wrong or faulty. I mean, yes, it is bad form to send one guy out there, but he doesn't have the resources to spare. So he's trying to, you know, minimize the cost, you know, the cost of damages against them by sending out one guy.
Well, technically, in my opinion, though, I mean, it seems like Guy Gardner's not powered down at all. So you got to assume some of the guys are kind of not limping around. And you're going to spare one guy, you should be able to spare two, because what happens if the one guy does get killed? You know, then you never know he gets killed. What if he gets – you don't know if he's lost.
That's why they gave him a strict frame. Like, yo, you come back in – I believe he told
– 24 hours.
Yeah, 24 hours.
Yeah, but also knowing full well he wouldn't do it. So that's – contradicts himself on the same page.
True. But again, yeah. we'll see. We'll see what happens when the story progresses. I do want to see what else happens. You know, was the decision to send out Guy Gardner, decision just to get him away, or is he going to meet like other people? I mean, other characters are supposed to be showing up in this book too. So I know Kyle's going to eventually show up. It'll be interesting to see if Guy and Kyle would fall back into place as the old two partners that were going around.
Maybe they'll do that, because I thought this was just a setup for Guy running into Hal the next issue. But maybe
yeah.
Really gonna...
yeah, but
I was going to say, one thing that I think is amazing is that this series, it's still, Hal is still really likable. There's something about him that's slightly different.
He's energetic. He's, you know, he's going full force, as, you know, again, punch people in the face, ask questions later.
It kind of seems like
it's like true to form. Is it going back true to form to what Hal Jordan, you know, means? Like, you know,
I think it seems like almost literal. Like, it's almost like the character popped out from the 70s and didn't know what happened the last 50 years of continuity and was like, what's going on here, guys?
He has no idea what flat screen TV are. Or, you
seems
know, or,
like, yeah, it seems like he's completely.
Or that women can vote. He has no idea what's going on.
It's exactly like that. It's very much like, what? But yeah, anyway.
Anyway, so that's pretty much been our review, our talks about Green Lantern. Green Lantern's number 4, Hal Jordan the Green Lantern Corps number 2, also our take on Justice League. Again, if you guys if you guys felt differently, let us know in the comments. Let us know in the Green Lantern forums. You know, we're always eager to know what's going on right now with you guys as to what you guys think is happening in the Green Lantern universe. Let us know your comments. If you agree, do you not agree? And, you know, stuff like that.
Leave us an iTunes review.
Leave us an iTunes review. That's true. Leave us an iTunes review because, you know, they go a long way. So, yeah, guys, if you rate us, leave us a comment, leave us a review. We'll love to hear from you. Again, at the Green Lantern Core Forums.com. You can totally, talk to us there. Till then. Stay green, everyone.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @TheGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, how?